Hi, my name is Janice Cruz, and you are listening to the Self-Love Science Podcast, where I can teach you a methodical approach to learning how to love yourself. So this week, I want to talk about conquering fear. This is one of my proudest feats right after learning the art and form of loving myself. So fear was the most challenging emotion that I had dealt with for my entire life. So I grew up with parents that I learned in therapy suffered from something called hypervigilance, which means for my entire life, the way that my parents expressed love and their highest value and the way that they felt that they could keep me safe in the world was to teach me how to be afraid. So we have conversations in my house all the time about everything that could go wrong, where it's like, oh, be careful. That thing is on the edge of the table and it could fall. And it's like the way that we say we love each other. Like, oh, make sure you put your seatbelt when you drive and, you know, look to the left and the right and blah, blah, blah. But what happened was my parents, they lived a very different life from what I lived. So I grew up like in a really, I mean, the first part of my life, I was in, I grew up in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. It was like a real like gang infested area. And there was a lot of crime. And we lived in a red line community in the hood. And we didn't have access to enrichment programs. And so what my parents learned from life is that there was danger out in the world, especially my dad. Like his entire life, he was constantly in danger in one form or another. So they raised me to just be afraid, like look out. And it came from a loving place, I know that. But what they could not have anticipated is that when you teach your kids about safety and fear, and you don't tell them what to replace it with, right? Like there's here, be safe. And then here's how you be brave, right? Like be safe about these things, be brave about these things. It was just all the former. So I grew up to be afraid of everything. I moved out of my parents' house and I was, I think, like 23 the first time. And I think that that was like when I first when I stopped sleeping through the night, because I moved out. First, I like lived with someone, and that was a very short-lived romance. No, not the romance, the apartment. Like we were together for a couple years, and then we moved out, but we only lived together for like, I don't even think it was 4 to 6 months. I don't remember. And then we broke up, but this apartment was like, you know, kind of ghetto. And he insisted on like living in the back because he didn't want to be on the lease. Like right when we were about to walk up to the door, he's like, I don't want to be on the lease. And I'm like, what? This is your apartment you want to pick? Anyway, RIP to $600 rent in Orlando back then. So I was really afraid. And I remember I would stay up all night. Like one night I was so paranoid and you could hear outside of the window, people walking by and talking. And I got so scared. I was like, I could hear a person. It sounded like they were in my living room. So I was sleeping and I could hear people outside. And I was like, oh my God, I got so afraid. My ass called the police. And I was like, somebody's in my apartment. I think, I don't know. I'm scared. But before that, I had like called everyone I knew. I was like, oh my God, somebody coming to my apartment. I don't know. It feels like somebody's breaking in. Like, it wasn't, dude. It was just like the neighbors being rowdy and I can hear it through the walls and all this shit. It was just, ugh, so embarrassing. So, and then the next apartment I live in, it was the same thing. Like I was so afraid. I was sleeping on my bed and I'd sleep with like a wine bottle, a fucking machete, bro, a bat. Like I would sleep on my bed and I surrounded myself with weapons. I was like, if somebody comes in, I'm always going to have something within reach, right? And it wasn't just like that. It wasn't just living alone. It was fear of danger everywhere I went. And sometimes I'd go out and I'd feel like waves of fear and I'd be frozen in fear. There was this one day I went to this beautiful park here in Orlando called Lake Eola. And on a Sunday at Lake Eola in the spring or the fall, I mean, you're talking about perfection. There are families playing on the lawn. People are having picnics. There's this giant farmer's market, this giant loop around with tons of stalls. There's hundreds of people. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful city. And there's all these swans in the lakes. You can like feed the swans. Random story. I got bit by a swan twice. The same swan bit me twice. I put my quarter in the little machine that you could get food for the swan. And that little impatient ass swan bit me. I have a lot in common with that swan. Now that I just called him impatient. So anyway, it's gorgeous. It's beautiful. I was there playing with my daughter. I was with my daughter's dad and his son. And it was like the most magnificent, beautiful, perfect day. And I remember I just started thinking like, oh my God, what if like a mass shooting happened? What if somebody reached over this fence and tried to kidnap my daughter? And I started visualizing something going horribly wrong. Now, this was not out of the ordinary for me. This is how I lived. That was my way of being. And I was frozen in fear. And I didn't even know that I was doing that until my daughter's dad was like, hey, are you okay? What did you just see? And he's looking around to see like what I was looking at. He goes, you look like you just saw a ghost. I had been like experiencing the emotions of fear and anxiety, and my body was frozen. And that is something that I experienced every day. Before I conquered my fear, I had learned, I went to like this millionaire mindset weekend, and we had put a rubber band around our hand. And I can't even remember if it was like if you had a negative thought or something, you're supposed to like pull the rubber band and snap it on your hand to force your brain to recognize and acknowledge the thought you were having. So after that weekend, I used that rubber band. I was like, man, I wonder how many times a day I'm thinking about fear, because I knew it was debilitating my life. Like I knew that I couldn't keep living like that. I was staying up all night, just like one eye open. And if I fell asleep, I would wake up angry at myself that I allowed myself to sleep knowing like, oh, you just slept an hour. Somebody could have broke in, whatever. So then I was pulling this Band-Aid to get clear on how many times a day I was having a fear-based thought. And this is one of the methods that I recommend to start the process. First, like understand what it is that you're dealing with. You don't have to, you know, create like a welt on your hand. It's just about paying attention. When I tell you that one time I had like 23 thoughts of horrible things happening, I mean, it was everything from danger things, mostly danger things, to just bad things, to arguments that could happen, or, I can't think of examples. So just like danger, right? Most danger things. Imagine getting a car accident, or I would imagine like somebody breaking in, or I would imagine getting hurt, or imagine like choking on something or whatever. Just like all this shit, like everything you could think of. 23 thoughts, right? 23 fear-based thoughts in the day. That does not sound like a lot. If you say, well, we have 60,000 thoughts in a day, how many hours are you awake, right? Let's say I did get an 8 hours night's rest, 16 hours awake, and I have 23 thoughts. So most of those waking hours, twice per hour, I imagined horrible things happening to me, to my life, to my family. And so that's step one, right? Like get clear on what you're dealing with, whatever the thought is, if it's fear or for something else. Then I got diagnosed with cancer. And on that day, I laughed because I was like, this is so stupid. This is so stupid. How do I get cancer if I'm super healthy? I'm a vegetarian. You know, I'm a yogi. I'm like always on and off these vegan bodybuilding programs and like my family, like the family I was living with, like my daughter's dad, and we would do health things together and eat healthy and all that. What I learned was all that fear didn't stop the worst case scenario from happening. It didn't stop it. It just came anyway. And I was like, what the hell? in one of these apartments that I lived in, like the second apartment I lived in, I didn't sleep a single night the whole year. And I remember at the end of the year being like I was staying awake till 7 a.m. and then when the sun came up, I'd go to bed. And I remember at the end of the year saying, you just lost a year of sleep and nothing happened. And then in this moment, and like my diagnosis, I was thinking, how many hours of your life did you lose to fear? And it didn't help you prevent anything. If not, it created a breeding ground. You could no longer distinguish between real fear and your perceived fear. So I was like, I'm not doing that anymore. And if fear crept up, I was like, I'm busy right now. I have to keep moving. And then I went to this holistic clinic. And in there, we would do group therapy. And then we would do weekly one-on-one therapy. And this is like, it was such an important and critical part of my journey to go through therapy. Number one, to address my emotional things, all the baggage. And I talked about my fear-based life, like not being able to relax ever, always on edge. So what was happening is my body was constantly pumping cortisol. There was the experience of being in danger. Like if you are in danger, you know, you get that, like if the police stop you and you get that tingly feeling that happens, that's how I was living, in a constant state of something about to go wrong. And because I was visualizing it, my brain couldn't detect the difference between my fabricated fear and fear that was actually happening. This causes inflammation in your body. You can't focus when you're afraid. You can't think logically and clearly when you are emotionally disturbed. And it's something that I was doing to myself. That's what fear is. It's a cage you're putting yourself in. And you lock the door. And I talk about, I compare this to a roller coaster and a simulated roller coaster. So when you're on a roller coaster, you're going through, like you're really moving, right? There's real momentum, there's real speed, there's real loops, and you get excited, whatever. And then it's suddenly you could walk off of it. That is what I equate to the original life experience. Something happens, you feel afraid, but then you walk. Then there's a moment where it's done and it's over with, right? No matter how bad it is, there is a completion moment. And then your brain is the simulated roller coaster. So I went to this like janky little mini theme park called Fun Spot in Kissimmee, Florida. It's so ghetto. I've been going there for years, but I haven't been like in so long. And everything is just original to when it was filmed. We used to go there when I was a kid. Anyways, and they have this simulated roller coaster, like any arcade, you sit in it, you put your little $5 or whatever arcades charge, and then you're sitting in the chair and the chair is shaking, and then they got the wind blowing and you see the screen and it's like moving and you're going on a roller coaster and you're like, and it's not as powerful as a roller coaster. It's not as like loop-de-loop as a roller coaster, but you're getting the, a simulated version of it. That is what your thoughts and your memory are. They are the simulation of a real life experience. Now, if you relive trauma, your body will experience the emotions again. They'll shift and transform as time goes on, depending on how you grow, but you relive the trauma. But also, even if it's not happened to you and you imagine it, you're going through the trauma as though it's real. Your body is believing you. It's like, did this happen or did this not happen? Is this going to happen? Are we going to face something, right? Like there's your future, your fear of future. Perhaps you're going into battle. And so your brain has this ability to analyze future danger, right? We have that. So here's how I conquered it. So in therapy, you know, I talked to them about this fear-based life and it was like, meditate about it. And I was like, meh, what do you mean? So just three things that I did. The first one was visualization. I used the same exact tactic that my brain was already used to doing. I was visualizing the danger. And this therapist said, but this time see it all the way through to the end and run through all the possible outcomes, but make your brain say what it would do. So he gave this crazy example, and he was like, I imagine myself sitting in a chair, and he goes, if a person came up to me with a chainsaw and they started hacking away at me, he's like, what would I do? I would be afraid. I would scream. I would cry. Maybe he tortured me. Maybe that eventually I'd die or I would survive. Like, you have to come to a conclusion where you're programming. Your brain is a computer system running a programming, and you're running the fear reel. What would happen in the end? And I went through every fear. And at this time, so the number one fear that I was like dealing with in the moment was like, okay, but what if my daughter doesn't have a mother anymore? And I was crying and I was like, oh my God, like here's my child. Nobody's going to love her as intensely as I love her. Like, how are people going to? And I just went through and I said, all right, if I die in this horrible way, what would happen? I'd be in pain. I'd die. It will be over. I'd go and figure out what's on the other side. And then what? Then my daughter would have to live with my grandparents or her dad. Okay. And then what? And you keep going. You feel the fear, right? You experience it. And then your brain is like, oh, well, what do you mean? What happens next? Like we hadn't thought about this part. Like we hadn't gone through all this part of the program yet. And then you think of the next step. Okay. Let's say that I'm not here. My daughter goes and lives with her grandparents. Then what? Oh, maybe people don't love her as much. Then what? Well, maybe she grows up and she has some sort of issues about not having a mother. Okay. And then what? And then she's probably just going to grow and have like a happy, healthy life. And then what? And then she'll probably look at pictures of me and videos of me and thank God there's this whole era of being able to capture every single moment, every single thing. And then what? And then she'll be okay. You know, even if bad things happen to her, she'll be okay. Even if good things happen to her, she'll be okay. I've got this huge family. She's got a dad, she's got grandparents, she's got aunts, cousins, even my friends and their kids, like she'll be okay. Okay, what if somebody breaks into my house? All right, well then I'll deal with it when it happens. I'll fight for my fucking life and I'll win or I won't. I'll come out traumatized or I won't. Okay, what if I come out traumatized? Then I'll deal with it. I'll go to therapy. Then what? I'll cry. Then what? And you keep going, man. It sounds extreme. And it is, because living a fear-based life is extreme. Your brain, what it's doing, what's happening in your body when you're constantly afraid, that's extreme. Physiologically, when you go to your doctor and they say, reduce your stress, your doctor's not going to go through, you know, from A to Z, like, what is it that stresses you? You go to therapy for that. Your doctor's not going to say, here, do yoga meditation. They might give you like one sheet, but they address the stress. They know that it's a thing. You got to go out into the world and find resources for stress. See your fear through to completion until you run out of outcomes. Because at the end of it, the outcome is always going to be, and then I guess there's nothing I can do about it anymore. And then I guess everything will be okay or it won't. And then what your brain does is it scraps that fear. It's like, okay, program complete. I went through that with so many things. Like, oh my gosh. Part two. The second thing is character creation. So this is where you identify these voices in your head. I loved this exercise because like made me think of a video game. So I was gamifying my life. This is one of the like kind of simulation theory things, like the world is a video game sort of concept. And I was like, that's really cool. And I like that because I love games. I like winning. And so I started playing life like it was a video game. And what I learned, what I discovered is, we have characters that we play. We have roles we play. You go to work, you're one person. You know, hopefully it's a professional. You go to school, you're one person. Around your parents, you're one person. Now you're you, but the way you can relax, the way you need to perform, perhaps you go to work and you're a leader and you're assertive. At home, you just want to like chill and you want to be funny and play. So I started drawing little characters and I was like, okay, who's this person, the fear person? And I got, there was the victim. This person, like, so desperate to be heard and listened to, and she needed to be saved. And I wrote out her characteristics. You know, the, what is that game? It's like they always make fun of this game in film. like Dungeons and Dragons, I think, and they have the little character creation thing. Print it out and fill that out. Write your character. Okay, the fear-based person. Let's call her Fearful Fauna or whatever. And then I write out, okay, you know, she's a victim. She feels sorry for herself. She's waiting for the white knight to come. And then I'll write out like the next person. And for me, the person causing my fear was the terrorist. And what's interesting is like your terrorist is like your shadow self, I think. I don't know. I've not done shadow work like that. But the terrorist, oh my God. What is that movie with Natalie Portman? And it's about aliens. And I'm going to like Google it right now. Annihilation. Annihilation. At the end of this movie, this is exactly how it works in your brain. At the end of that movie, she faces the alien that is like mimicking everything she's doing, right? And she's trying to get away, but it's like if she goes left, the alien's going left, right? If she goes right, the alien's going right until it's like pressed up against her. That's what the terrorist is in your mind. It knows your every move. It knows what you're going to say, what you're going to do because you fabricated it. It takes like, I tried to like conquer it, right? Like the victim, I had to shut her down. I was like, you can't show up to this party. Debbie Downer. The person that's like, you can't do this. You're not good. Yo, you're not welcome. I shut her the fuck down because that's what it took to conquer her, right? The victim, like, you're easy. Get the fuck out of here. But the terrorist, I was like, you got to go. And he was like, make me. And I was like, whoa. I'm here having conversations in my head back and forth with like terrorists. You have to go. Get the fuck away from me. You're ruining my life. And I realized so many things about that is like, yes, this is all happening in your head. That's how your brain works. That's how powerful you are. The terrorist was ruining my life. He was my fiercest competitor. He was my strongest video game character. I couldn't defeat him. In my mind, it was Guy. I didn't want to defeat him. So I had to learn to honor and respect him. Because I said the warrior in me respects and acknowledges the warrior in you. And then I was like, where were you born? Like, where did you come from? And I pretended that I was inviting the terrorist to the party. And I said, look, we're having a good time now. You stopping me from having fun. You're stopping me from living life. Look at this excitement, right? Yes, you hurt me. And then I was like, but you protected me. You looked out for me and I realized, oh, now I know where you were born. I saw the moment where I had to grow the fuck up and stand up for myself for the very first time as an adult. And it was in this space and it was in this relationship. And I said, oh, that guy, you had to come here to save me because that person was destroying you and you were on a path to self-destruction. And you weren't strong enough to stand up for yourself. You weren't brave enough to do it. You were afraid. You were only the victim. You were only the kind person. You were the person who bad things had not yet happened to. So then my brain created a really strong character. And it was like a character. And it was like, don't worry. I'm going to deal with this, right? Like how you see kind of in those sort of multiple personality disorders, if that's the appropriate term, and people, it comes to the surface, but for the rest of us, it's just happening in here. In those cases, like that movie Sybil, that is just us seeing it under a microscope, but it exists for everyone. So I was like, I was sitting in this like meditation pod. I was in this like yoga studio, but they had these like red light therapy pods. And I would go in there and I would meditate for an hour or whatever. And I just had the moment where I couldn't defeat my terrorist. And I realized that's not how this part of my brain works. This person needs to know, thank you for keeping me safe. That part of me, that tough girl in there, how many times Did I not save my life by bringing that person to the table? How many people were out to destroy me in life, right? For me, relationships. It's always the relationships trying to take me out. And then I was like, damn, thank you for protecting me. So this part of my brain went from being my enemy, taking over. It was too strong. But it was like the right amount of strong. It's just I needed to put the terrorist away. The terrorist is a warrior now, right? And I have to bring in someone new, the person who can handle life with peace, the person who can conquer things without anger and fear and rage. So you identify your characters, give them names, draw them, print out a cartoon, and write their characteristics. What does that character say? Right? Debbie Downer says, you can't do that. Write that down in quotation marks. You can't do that. And then now you got to practice working on the new characters. Like if you're playing a video game, if you don't play games, then the way that you work is like you can create one character. You can decorate them, create their traits. Like, oh, this one's a sage or this one's a warrior, blah, blah, blah. You build them up, you practice with them, and then you can put them back and you bring up a new character. And they're a different type of person. That's how it works in life. That's what you do to conquer this life. If you have an overworked character, perhaps rage is your thing and you got the biggest, baddest, toughest, like, you know what I'm saying? Looking like Hellboy. Put Hellboy to the side and bring up peaceful warrior, yogi. Like, what can we do to create some new energy in life? And I created my powerful self, you know, this dope self, this person. Like, if you're watching the video of this, this person that you see before you, she's base, the home base. This is me. It is so authentic and so real. I am this person in every room I walk. And I watched a video that Jay-Z said, I'm the same person everywhere. It is I am the same person everywhere. So that's your methodical approach to conquering fear. One, identify how afraid are you really, right? And then two, you work through it, like run through the scenarios. And then three, start identifying the characters. Who's running the show? And when you have breakdowns, like sometimes you gotta like resort to looking back at your character list and saying, who is it that is making this decision, right? I can't let fearful Fauna run the show. I can't let Debbie Downer show up, you know, to my mom life, right? Debbie Downer ain't welcome in here. You think my kid cares that I'm having a bad day? You think she cares I'm having a bad week? She just wants to play. You know, there's healing in playing. So that's who shows up, the kid, the little kid in me. If you try this, I'd love to hear about it. I'd really love to hear what you've conquered or what your characters are, you know. So you can find me on Instagram at Self Love Science Podcast. You can also contact me at my website, janicecruz.com. And I really do hope all of your dreams come true. I hope you all win in life. I hope you find some peace from this practice. Have a beautiful day, everyone.